Welcome to Bina, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of Bina, our guest is cookbook author and food writer Julia Tertian, whose new book is Simply Julia, 110 Easy Recipes for Healthy Comfort Food. She's joined in conversation by Anthony Porofsky, a co-host on the hit television show, Queer Eye. And now join Carolyn McCauley of Six and I as she introduces Julia Tertian and Anthony Porofsky.
We are so excited to welcome Julia Tertian to our virtual stage for the release of her new cookbook, Simply Julia, 110 Easy Recipes for Healthy Comfort Food. Named as one of the 100 greatest home cooks of all time by Epicurious, Julia is beloved for her delicious, accessible recipes and authentic and approachable personality. She is the best-selling author of Small Victories, Now and Again, and Feed the Resistance, a practical and inspiring handbook for political activism with recipes. Julia is a dedicated food equity advocate. Her project, Equity at the Table, is a free digital directory of women and gender nonconforming individuals in the food industry, focusing on the BIPOC and LGBTQ plus community, inspired by the aphorism, build a longer table and not a higher fence. Julia also hosts the award-winning podcast, Keep Calm and Cook On, where she hosts thoughtful conversations about cooking, writing, mental health, relationships, and more. And Simply Julia, she is back with foolproof recipes for more nutritious takes on the simple, comforting meals for which she's known. With practical chapters such as weeknight go-tos and make-ahead mains, it's the kind of flavorful yet unfussy food you want to make at home. Readers will also find Julia's signature 7 lists, as well as personal essays on topics ranging from body positivity to getting out of your comfort zone. Julia is in conversation this evening with Anthony Porofsky, who most of us know and love as the food and wine expert on Netflix's Emmy award-winning series, Queer Eye. Anthony is a self-taught cook with a lifelong passion for food cultivated by culinary icons, including Julia Child and Anthony Bourdain. He is the New York Times best-selling author of Anthony in the Kitchen, and his next cookbook, Anthony, Let's Do Dinner, is set for release this fall. Thank you all again so much for joining us, and please welcome Julia Tertian and Anthony Porofsky into your homes.
Hi.
Perfect timing.
That was
hi.
We did it.
It's like it's just us.
Is it?
And we're both wearing black, and it's very cozy and intimate.
No one else is here.
Thank you so much for letting me do this. I'm very honored, very grateful, a little bit nervous because I don't want to disappoint you. So I'm going to do my best.
Well, first I will. I just said no one else is here to make us more comfortable, but I'm very grateful to everyone who's here.
Yes, of course, of course, of course.
That was like not the right thing to say. But I've already messed up, so don't be nervous. And I am so grateful for you. I have been looking forward to this for so long. And as I've told you, your support means so much to me and just to, you know, the general queer community and food community. I'm just glad to be in it with you. And I'm very glad to be here with you.
I think that's a perfect segue. I know that I'm supposed to start with questions, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I love a little listicle situation. So I made a little list after I went through Simply Julia with things I love about Julia. And also, it refers to you in third person, like you're not here.
Okay.
So I'm just giving you a heads up. Okay, so number one, her love of carrots. There are so many carrots
there
in the book,
so
and I'm here for it because they're fantastic. You get them in a big bag. They're cheap. The organic ones are like $1.50 more. Why not? Two, her oft-swapping of beef with ground turkey, which I've been doing for a lot of reasons of sustainability, but also for like health reasons. And so I applaud you for that. Number three, the fact that sopa azteca or tortilla soup is also known as honeymoon soup because she and Grace had it during, well, their honeymoon, which is the sweetest thing. Number four, her idea of borscht is so completely, sorry, her idea of barscht is so completely different than mine, but we can still be friends because hers is Russian and has meat and veggies in it. I'm a Polak. And so with us, it's just like, it's like a clear, it's like a consomme situation. You don't put anything in it except whipped cream. And that's it. Sour cream. Sorry. That's how nervous I am.
That's a Freudian slip.
Exactly. Number five, her need of a poster to tell her what feelings she's feeling. So my therapist actually uses plushie toys. And for anybody who may not understand, well, first of all, you should get the book so you can read about it and know what we're talking about right now.
If you're feeling left out,
but some of us, although we can be, highly sensitive people and we can be in tune with our feelings, I'm going to speak for myself. Sometimes I struggle with addressing what the actual feeling is. And so posters or plushie toys can be very helpful. And yes, to mental health awareness and having a therapist or social worker or an empathetic ear, it's very important. Number six, the fact that cooking has been a majorly calming force in my life, end quote. And that's on a thought on cooking and anxiety. I'm going to bring them up like 10 freaking times because I love your mini essays as much as I love going through the recipes I'm here for them. Number seven, her decision. Oh, this one gets me all excited. Her decision to put a photograph of her dear grandmother, Beatrice, dressed as a chic AF sailor holding a cigarette and not giving any context or explanation other than the fact that she had a bakery. You have to see this photo. I didn't write down what page it's on. Like, what is this photo?
I know. It's pretty. It's amazing.
I'm almost done, I swear. Number eight, there are 11 of them, by the way, I should have prefaced. Number eight, disclaimers don't taste good. This one like hit me to the core. So I don't know about you, but I love apologizing for a dish before my guests have had the opportunity to even taste it. It's like a fear of success thing. Like whenever I have, when I would have people over like a year ago and before that, and I would like apologize and be like, oh, like this is a little too salty or not too, like let them make the decision for themselves. Like, don't be self-deprecating like Tina Fey and 30 Rock is one thing, but being self-deprecating about something like you've put your heart and your soul into, like, let them make that decision, yeah. You know? So I agree with you on that. That's something I can learn for. Number nine, canned salmon is okay. One of my favorite recipes. I can't wait to try it. It's the ricotta and potato chip fish cakes with peas. I've never had canned salmon before, but now I want to try it because you said it was okay. Because that's great. That makes it okay.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
In oil or water?
I get it in water, but either way is fine. Okay. And you can also, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt this experience. There are these two women whose first names I cannot remember, but they go by the Salmon Sisters. They are sisters who are salmon fisher people.
Yeah.
In Alaska, and they you can like buy their salmon on the internet and they'll ship it to you and it's, you know, packed well and stuff, but they also make the most delicious canned smoked salmon. It's like, it's so good. I wouldn't use it in that recipe. To me, like,
okay,
just eat it out of the can and enjoy it for that wonderful moment, but I'm all for things in cans all around.
Please post about these two lovely ladies. And when we offline,
I should not say that, but I said it.
Good thing we're not live. Number 10, her love of cloth napkins. I've recently gotten into cloth napkins and I am such a fan. And you don't like to use tablecloths either. Well, they just get dirty and then you have to like wash them and iron them and it's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. But cloth napkins just make everything feel a little more special. And when you're like rubbing, especially because I'm like a little bearded, and if I used to use Kleenexes, then I would end up with stubble. Anyway, nobody asked for that. TMI. And finally, number 11, last but not least, breakfast nachos. Brilliant.
Never too early. Thank you so much for making that list.
That's my list.
Good night, everyone. That was great.
We're going to go offline about canned salmon now. Look, congratulations on your new cookbook. It's really beautiful. I know I mentioned the A Thought section. That's the part that really stood out to it. Anything that makes a book more personal and kind of like weaves it in with mental health and just kind of like what you're going through is always always so fascinating to me. Why was it important to include a thought on the worthiness of our bodies in a cookbook about healthy comfort food?
Thank you for asking this. This is like super important to me and meaningful to me. And I'm so happy to have the opportunity, not just to, you know, get to write about it and include it in the book, but to also get to talk about it with people like yourself, to talk about it with, you know, in front of all the people who are listening. So basically, I guess, long story short, I wrote a healthy cookbook that's not about weight loss. And I wrote a healthy cookbook that doesn't use the word healthy as a substitute for skinny or for deprivation or restriction of any kind. And I did that because I hadn't seen that. And I feel like I really needed to see it for myself. And I've cooked since I was so young, since before I can remember. I've always, always loved cooking. And as much pleasure and positivity and curiosity as I've felt around cooking my whole life, I've felt at the same time, simultaneously, just so many fraught feelings about eating and about my body. And I have not known how to reconcile that. And I've really struggled with it. And over the past few years, I've just decided, you know, I made the very conscious decision to try and alleviate some of that struggle and to really dig into it. And so much of that work, which, and when I say work, I mean like work in therapy, work in conversations with my incredible wife, who's so supportive in changing the conversations with my friends and my family, setting boundaries in those conversations, like expanding them. Also just starting new conversations, like meeting other people, changing who I follow on social media, and honestly just doing a lot less talking and a lot more listening, and, you know, listening to very particular podcasts and reading different books. And I actually shared a bunch of these resources yesterday on Instagram, if anyone is curious what these are. And so all of this has gotten me into a place where I go through life eating with as much joy as I do cooking food. And I just feel a lot better and I feel healthier. And healthy for me is about that. It's about feeling good in my body and feeling like I understand that all those issues that were so hard for me weren't actually personal. They were very cultural. They were, you know, coming from everywhere. And I think it's really, really valuable to respond to that from everywhere, because we're getting it from everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't write, I don't know, I didn't write like a memoir about my body, although memoirs about people's bodies are amazing and have been transformative for me. And, you know, I'm thinking of like Roxane Gay's Hunger, like changed my life reading that book. Those books are so essential. But I also think weaving these messages into something as familiar and as friendly as a cookbook is really, really important, because I think cookbooks just get received in a different way than other books. And we also, like, you know, I'm a cookbook reader as much as I am an author. Like, these are some of the cookbooks I own, like not all of them. And cookbooks are like one of the only books that people go back to over and over, you know? So I feel like I'm in this dialogue and this conversation with all the people who read my books. And I want that conversation to be deeply honest. And I also wanted people to know when they come to my book, when they open Simply Julia, like, you're in a safe place and like you will not be judged here and you're welcome here. And part of establishing that safety and that trust, I wanted to, you know, to be vulnerable. And so that is kind of some of the reasons, I guess, why I included it. And I just wanted to be really clear about what I mean when I say healthy and to give you some more context for that. And also, I don't know, I feel like a cookbook that is just recipes is a great cookbook. That's what most cookbooks are. But I also just think there's more to food than just cooking. And there's so many feelings. And that's also why I was so excited to talk to you, because you are so open about talking about feelings. And it's just so valuable. And just to see that modeled, I don't know, I felt really alone in a lot of these feelings for a long time. Like, I think diet culture really renders us, like, it isolates us. Like, it isolates us from relationships with other people, from relationships with ourselves. Like, I always felt like I was, because I was never at the weight that I thought I was supposed to be or whatever messed up stuff, you know, I was thinking, I just felt like I was like failing, and I felt embarrassed, and I felt some shame and guilt and all these deeply negative feelings. And in working through these feelings and then in sharing the feelings, like I quite simply don't feel so alone, and that feels amazing. So
I think it's so important. Yeah. It's like that whole terminal uniqueness. I think that with so many things that I go through, that I'm like the only one going through. Then as soon as you start to share and start to be open-minded, like I think you really hit on something with the whole social media part about like who you choose to follow. It's like, does it become like less challenging to kind of like maintain to practice? Like it must be hard to, sorry, this is like a whole other topic. This could go on for 4 hours, but it's like maintaining that. It's like, I struggle with it in my own way for sure. It's like, it's interesting how I wouldn't judge anybody else, but as soon as the mirror, like as soon as I'm looking in front of the mirror, then it's like, it's so easy to be hard on myself that I'm not doing this or I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And the social media part is just, it can be so tricky.
Yeah. I mean, I cannot begin to imagine what it's like for you. I think that you are not only on social media, you're also on television, and you are also, I think it's very different to go through the world just in terms of body stuff as a queer man, or however you identify. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
queer works.
That's the name of the show.
True.
And so, you know, I think a lot of this stuff is gendered in a lot of ways. Like, I think a lot of this is, you know, in many ways harder for women than men in our society, but also it's not gendered in lots of ways. It's just like, basically, like a lot of people make a lot of money off of so many of us feeling like we're not good enough and we're not doing good enough and we're taking up more space, you know, like we live in a culture that encourages us to take up as little space as possible. Like,
totally.
I just think about that as like, whoa. So I don't know. I think about all these things a lot. Obviously they're really important to me and they're just as important to me as the recipes, but I also think they are, I don't know. They go really well with the recipes. And I just, in sharing this essay and just hearing from lots of people, I've come to understand, yeah, I'm not alone in this. So many people feel this. And
are you kidding me? Not alone in this? It has, because I was looking over the questions and I was looking, sorry to cut you off, but,
no, please.
And this was one that like, I was looking over the thoughts and it was one that I wanted to add. And then I kind of looked it up online and there's been so much pickup on this thought and so many people can relate to it. I think it's incredibly helpful to so many people out there. So I'm so, so glad that you included it.
Well, thank you so much. And I really appreciate that. And it's, you know, in terms of talking to you about this, I've been thinking a lot about, and we've spoken about this before with each other, but just like the power of just representation and visibility and, you know, what you do in your work on television and online. And, you know, I feel like what I've been able to accomplish in my cookbooks, one thing I just never anticipated, like I thought, I've always loved cookbooks and I wanted to make them. And I thought like, wow, I can help so many people feel more at ease in their kitchen. Like that's a big goal of mine. Like,
cause you're very personal.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's like disarming in a good way for people where it just makes them comforting. Cause so many people are intimidated by cooking.
Yeah.
But
no. And the world is like stressful enough. So I'm like, the last thing you should feel when you're cooking is stressed. And I mean, I feel like you encourage this so like generously. And but the thing that I didn't anticipate was like, because I write about what I cook at home and my home is me and my wife. So I just write about Grace all the time. And she's also
and your dogs
and our dogs. They'll be very upset. I didn't say
forget.
That first.
Exactly.
And it's just, it's led to so much like meaningful connection with like other members of the queer community. And that has been so important for me. And, you know, cookbooks are things people can share with their families in a way that's just, I don't know, it's an easier in sometimes. And I feel like I'm getting to re-experience that feeling. I mean, I continue to feel that with the queer community, but I'm re-experiencing that feeling in terms of talking so openly and honestly about just how I've felt about my body and diet culture. And it feels, I don't want to misuse this term, but it feels like something I've been very closeted about, like, and I've been very quiet about, and it's like to come out with it feels really powerful. And because so many people feel that way, like I just think it's worth talking about and writing about and sharing. And, you know, I don't want to underestimate my readers. Like, they don't just, you know, want an idea for what to make for dinner. It's like, they also have other feelings and thoughts.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the fact that you're like, you just mentioned like a minute ago, something about like sharing about what your family experience and your family life is like, I think it's so attractive to so many people in the LGBTQIA plus community population, because a lot of us are trying to figure out what that is for us, right? Because we didn't, it's, you know, a little different than it is for like the heterosexual people. Mm-hmm. So we have to kind of, so I think you kind of really lead by example with all those, mm-hmm. all those personal stories.
You're listening to cookbook author and food writer, Julia Tertian, whose new book is entitled Simply Julia, 110 Easy Recipes for Healthy Comfort Food. She's joined in conversation by Queer Eye's Anthony Porofsky on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So this one's, it's definitely focused on like healthy comfort food, but it's not, and now I'm like so sensitive about using the word healthy.
There's no judgment.
But it's not, thank you. But it's not like, you know, when you touched on this, like any healthy cookbook that I've ever seen, like, can you explain how is this different? And like, how do you define healthy, and, mm-hmm. and why of this, like, why did you decide
to create
this book, a healthy cookbook, if you will?
The other word that's like in the subtitle is, it's healthy comfort food. And to me, mm-hmm. those words, I really like them together. I think that they can be really good friends. And, you know, for me, quite simply, when I feel my most healthy, I feel really comfortable. I feel comfortable in my skin. I'm not picking at my shirt. I am not worried about what someone is thinking of me. I'm not thinking about what I think of myself. I'm just comfortable. I'm confident. I'm calm. That's when I feel healthiest. And for me, it has been that experience of getting to a point where I can articulate it that way has been, I will tell you this because I feel like you will appreciate this. 1 hour before we got on, I just got off of my Zoom therapy session with my like
amazing. Oh my God, I did too. Mine was at 4 p.m.
Mine was 4:30. And I have been working with a therapist who is like specializes in like body justice and like body liberation. And she's amazing.
Is her first name Carol?
Carmen.
Never mind.
Okay.
Because well, mine does that too. And her name
fantastic.
Is Carol. Anyway.
I would flip if we had the same one. That would be so fun. And I would be so impressed that she didn't tell either of us.
Nope.
But I'm really glad to know there's many. And I think just a PSA here that like there are many and it's worth seeking out. If this is something that is resonating for you in any way and you're looking for help of any type, like there are people who really know this language and
specialize in this.
And I am like so not an expert here. Like I'm not a therapist. I'm not an authority on this. I am just someone who is very, very willing to be honest, and I'm very supported in doing that. And I feel very lucky for that support. Like even right now in this moment, like I feel comfortable and safe to talk about this. So anyway, what was I talking about? I don't know.
Oh my God, you're so mean. We were discussing kind of like how you define healthy.
Oh, thank you so much.
And why you decided to create. That's what I'm here for.
No, you're a really good listener. Thank you. For me, this whole process and everything we're talking about has just been like incredibly liberating. And so for me, I define healthy as feeling free. Like it has everything to do with freedom. And it also has everything to do with just a deep sense of connection. So for me, healthy is about me feeling connected to me and me feeling connected to the people I'm cooking for or the people I'm cooking with, the people I'm eating with, the people in this moment right now that I'm talking about food with, feeling connected to the food itself, like where it comes from, you know, honoring all the people along the way, compensating them, like acknowledging them, like that deep sense of connection feels deeply healthy to me. And it, you know, none of this has anything to do with like calories or fiber or protein or any of these things. That it has to do with how I feel when I eat. And what I want to feel is ease, and I want to feel joy. And I find when I talk about this, I'm trying to be present and not like listen to myself talk about it, but like, I feel like I get quite serious because this is really serious and like really important. But also I feel like the part that's missing that I just want to mention is like, there's also so much pleasure within this and so much joy. And I used to just feel so miserable about so many things I was eating or things mm-hmm. I was restricting myself from eating and I was wanting, or, you know, and on and on. And I just now experience so much more joy, and it's more fun. And, you know, like, I just think that's valuable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Every single question, I feel like we could just discuss for an hour. So you worked on a lot of this book just as the pandemic was taking hold. What was it like to create a cookbook during this time? And tell us a little bit about the process.
Yeah. So it was interesting. So I turned in the manuscript for the book in February of 2020. So the manuscript for cookbook, at least to me, means all the words. So mm-hmm. all the recipes, they were written, they were tested multiple times by multiple people, including Grace tested every single recipe, which was amazing. And so lucky. And all of the other words, you know, the introductions to each recipe, the, you know, introduction to the book, like all the words for the book were done, turned in, ready to go, and ready to be accompanied by their photographs. And I, on previous books, have photographed everything in my house. I want it to feel like from my kitchen to yours. I also don't want to pay to rent a studio. And mm-hmm. I also want to use all my stuff and, you know, to have it feel like me. And I've always done that with like a team of people. So a bunch of people in my house. And I was planning to do that in March of 2020, like a year ago, right as, you know, the pandemic was becoming as real as it continues to be. And so that plan just quickly was not happening. Didn't feel feasible or safe or necessary. Like, it's a cookbook, the world will go on, like mm-hmm. it can wait. And so I was gonna just wait and, you know, put it on the shelf and we'll get back to it. And then I remembered I live 10 minutes away from this amazing woman, Melina Hammer, who's like a very gifted food photographer, food stylist, and prop stylist. And as you know, because you've been through this
process, very trifecta, unusual,
unicorn. And she also lives 10 minutes away, and we don't live in a densely populated place. Like, we're two of a handful of people who lived here. Mm-hmm. And so that was just, you know, very, very lucky. And I called her and I was like, I don't know how you're feeling right now, what your bandwidth is, but, you know, we might be able to pull this off. Like, what do you think? And so we spent a month making the photos, and we were never in the same room. I prepared things at home, just the two of us. And she has an amazing husband. I have an amazing wife. They were very supportive, but no other people. I would prepare.
Sorry to interrupt, but you're totally like Taylor Swift and Aaron Dessner composing Folklore and Evermore. That's exactly what it is. You created this beautiful art and you weren't even together.
I need to like text her this and let her know. And I would prep all this stuff, put it in containers, labeled. I would plan each photo. I had like reference photos for each photo, and I would make a box every morning. Sometimes I'd tuck in, you know, my grandmother's dish, something no one would know, but it's meaningful to me that it's in the book. Put it in there and then leave it
on. A little Easter egg, also very Taylor Swift. Exactly. Sorry, go on.
And then I would drop it off on her doorstep, and she would take it from there and put the finishing touches. And we texted all day, like, do you want the dark blue napkin or the light blue napkin? Like, and I never went to a grocery store, and we pulled it off. And, you know, to me, it was the most incredible experience of like direct, clear communication. Like, I had to be totally decisive. Mm-hmm. I also had to let go. Like, I wasn't there. Like,
yeah.
Like, you are very skilled and I trust you. And like, you know, so that was sort of amazing. So that is how I would say COVID affected the production of the book. But it also affected, I think, some of the, I don't know, feeling of the book, because I got to continue to edit the book over the last year. So I got to reflect on this a bit more and add some stuff. And this book was always intended to, you know, include recipes that have a lot to do with what I cook. And that includes a lot of stuff for my community. We do a lot of volunteer work and stuff. A lot of the recipes come from that. And, you know, I don't know how you have felt or everyone listening, but, you know, this past year, I think it's just been hard for everyone in very different ways. And one of those challenges for me is just, I just have a very hard time when I feel like I'm not useful. Like I just really want to be useful. And it wasn't that I didn't know the following before, but this year has cemented for me that like all the skills that I have, because I'm a home cook, those skills are really valuable. And those skills can be used outside of my kitchen, or it can be used in my kitchen and extend outside. So, you know, as home cooks, we don't just, we're not restaurant chefs who someone preps everything and cleans up after us and stuff. Like we plan, we budget, we clean up, we keep track of like what's in the fridge and freezer and what needs to be used up. We consider the people we're cooking for and who likes what and who doesn't like what. And like, these are amazing skills and they can be applied in different ways and they can help us feel useful and helpful to our communities. So there's a lot of that woven into the book. So
yeah. I think especially in these times, on the topic of community, you are both queer and you are Jewish. How do these identities show up in your food and your work?
Oh my gosh. They show up in so many places and mostly in the stories behind the recipes. So much of the food that I most love to eat is just connected to everyone in my life. People who came before me who I didn't know, like my grandmother who you met in that photograph, you know, and my friends and, you know, my family that I've both been born into and the family I've chosen. And there's a lot of overlap between those two, which I'm very fortunate to feel. And so, yeah, I think my Jewish identity comes through in a lot of recipes, like the babbala, the matzah meal pancakes, like the stuffed cabbage recipe, which I know that you are a
stuffed cabbage. Thank you for using a tomato sauce and not using a creamy mushroom sauce. I love veselka, but it drives me crazy. You did it right. Sorry, go on.
I'm with you on that one. You know, all those recipes are like, those are the things I loved the most when I was growing up. It's just so, they just bring up so many memories to me and they make me feel so connected to just all the people who came before me. And that feels, I just feel so grateful that that is something I can access on a daily basis if I want. Like, I don't know if I want to eat stuffed cabbage every day. I mean, I would, that would be fine. But like, I can make that whenever I want. And I can feel, I can bring back these memories. I can bring back these people. Like that's like an amazing thing we're able to do. And we can all do that, you know, like, so that feels really cool. And in terms of gay stuff, I mean, I'm just very gay. And it's like, you know, I talk about my wife in like every recipe because basically it's just the two of us eating all the time. And watching Bravo, and that's our life. So
we'll talk about Bravo some other time. I will say Housewives of Salt Lake City was just the most fast. Anyway, back on topic. I do like when you touch on, you know, the fact that you're Jewish and heritage and like that part I've always connected to and I've always understood. But in terms of like connecting sort of like you're queer, hey, she never barks and she just barked. I think she heard something she didn't like. But touching on like kind of the connection of food to being queer, I never really understood that until like you came into my life. I really mean that because it's something that I never really built a connection with. And now I just understand in terms of like kind of like getting together, and it's kind of tracing back to what I was like saying earlier about just like your chosen family and continuing those traditions. I love the like the intersectionality of like taking like those who came before us and our culture and tying that into the people that, you know, we choose to love and who we surround ourselves with in our life, and just like kind of connecting with them. I just think that it's incredibly beautiful. And it's like, there's so much of that in your book.
I'm just trying not to cry. That means so much to me. And I feel like, yeah, we've spoken about this before, because, you know, I've been asked about like, what is queer food? And I'm like, I don't actually know what that means. Like, a gay person cooked it. Like, I don't know. Like,
right.
And like, you know, there's stereotypes within that, like, I don't know, flamboyant brunch or something, or like potlucks mm-hmm. for us lesbians, which is not usually like a word I use to describe myself unless I'm like making a joke, which I don't know what that means, but I'll talk about it in therapy. So, but within all of this, and I think what you just spoke so beautifully to, and it really means so much to me, is, you know, our day-to-day lives are our lives. And if we have the freedom to live them exactly how we want, which is freedom a lot of other people earned for us, mm-hmm. I just think, you know, I think the best way to honor that is to live as proudly and as fully and as joyously as we can. And for me, all of those things are best celebrated with food and best, you know, just marked by food. And when I think about just my day-to-day, ordinary, just domestic life, you know, my life inside of my house, which I'm in right now, like, it's always about food. I'm always thinking about, like, what am I going to make next and all right. that. And it's, so it's like, this is my day-to-day life. It's, I'm a home cook. I'm, you know, culturally Jewish. I'm gay. I'm like, I'm all these things. And it's like, it all comes together, I think, at my table, like, just literally. So
yeah,
I don't know. I really appreciate what you said. And I just think, you know, the two of us, along with so many other amazing people, just living in the way we do and just bringing our full selves to our work is valuable. And our work happens to be just really delicious. So,
for me, like 70% of the time, for you, like 100% of the time. So your wife, Grace, regularly features in your recipes and your books. Can you talk about your decision to share this part of your life with your fans? Like, how do you balance privacy with sharing your world in general, like including social media, asking for a friend who is me?
I will say that Grace is downstairs keeping our dogs quiet and watching us.
Same. Well, Grace isn't here, but Kevin's in the other room literally watching Bravo and trying to keep Neon quiet. But yeah.
And I you know, she's welcome to come upstairs if she'd like to answer this, because everything I know about maintaining a healthy relationship with social media, which I don't think I do, but everything I know about that I have learned from my wife, who just has a lot more experience on the internet than I do. And Grace ran a wonderful website, Design Sponge, for 15 years, and she lives so much of her life online. And she therefore has dealt with a lot of stuff I wish she hadn't needed to deal with. I don't know if that's a sentence, but you know what I mean?
And it made sense.
Yeah. And it also means she's really good at navigating stuff and really good at understanding all the amazing things that can happen on social media and just the internet. Like, the fact that you and I can have this conversation, other people can hear it. Like, I know we're not on social media right now, but it's like, this is amazing that this is possible.
Yeah.
And like, this to me is like, this is the best of the internet, not like us. I mean us, but like, you know, this kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
And she's taught me to like really, you know, hold that and, you know, see how great that is. And also know the difference between like what happens on your phone and what happens when you put your phone down. And so, yeah, I don't know how healthy my boundaries are. And I literally spent most of therapy talking about that today. Like, this book is so personal. So I'm receiving these amazing messages that I'm so moved by, but I'm also like, I'm used to answering questions about like, what do I do with this pot roast? like that is not emotionally anything for me. Like, I'm just happy to talk about it and stuff, but to like really talk to people about body image and stuff, like I'm learning what that feels like, and it's amazing, but I'm just learning. But I think the biggest thing Grace has taught me is to just not share anything that you haven't essentially work through in therapy. Like, I don't put anything on the internet that like I haven't thought through every angle of it, or that I'm not, you know, I'm ready to take on any question or comment, and also like ready to like put up a boundary if someone says something not nice, which luckily for me, knock on wood, doesn't happen very often. But yeah, I think just having just some clear boundaries, but also really welcoming all the like amazing stuff that can come through it.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guest is cookbook author and food writer Julia Tertian, whose new book is Simply Julia, 110 Easy Recipes for Healthy Comfort Food. She's joined in conversation by Queer Eye's Anthony Porofsky. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
Well, I love that the way that you share about it is that you're not presenting yourself as like an expert who knows it all, but you're kind of like, since we're talking so much about therapy, like the awareness phase where you're just like aware that you can sometimes have like a problematic relationship with social media and you're not necessarily coming with a solution, but it's like the honesty and the openness and the vulnerability of coming and saying like, this is something that I'm currently working on, which I think a lot of people respond to. Cause there's like, there's nothing that kind of like irks me more is that like when someone tells me what to do in some way, shape or form, and it just makes me uncomfortable. And just like sharing that you're actually like living through that process, I think that's something that a lot more people can relate to, then that's probably a lot better for them than someone just telling them exactly how to do something.
Yeah.
Except for recipes, because recipes are important. So let's talk about those.
Segues. So good.
Simply Julia, you write about how going to a singing workshop gave you a newfound respect for the importance of recipes. So can you tell us about that?
So my feelings about recipes are complex, and I have written recipes for so long. I love writing recipes. I take so much pleasure in just clearly explaining things and giving directions that are very supportive and trying my best to not leave any room for questions. And I just want everyone to feel like they've got it. I put a lot of attention into the detail of this, and as much time as I spend on them and as much thought, I also feel like they are there for you if you want, and you can use them as closely or from a distance as you would like. And if you want to follow it to the T, and if that feels like something that makes you calm, it is there for you and it will work and you will get the return on your investment and like including your groceries. And I also feel like if you just want to see it as like an idea for something and it's a jumping off point, great. And if you want to riff on it and make it yours, wonderful. And if you just want to flip through the book because you're feeling whatever, and maybe it sends you to your kitchen and you make something entirely different off the cuff, like to me, it still has served its purpose. And I, when I'm not working on writing recipes, I never, ever follow them, like ever, unless I'm maybe baking a cake or something.
Same.
Yeah. And I just, and I cook so intuitively. And that is why I love cooking at home, because I just feel, I feel so like, this is also based on the fact that I've done this for so long. Like I'm not a better cook than anyone else. I've just like the 10,000 hour thing. I've just done it over and over. So it doesn't scare me. I feel like if I don't have an ingredient I thought I had, like, oh, cool. Now I get to figure it out. Like if I've left something in the oven for too long, I'm like, just want to call my mom because she likes everything.
Is that how Hasselback carrots came to be?
Like, just, what do you mean? Like
the Hasselback carrots, because usually it's potatoes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't. Yes. I love carrots and I know you do too. And I'm so glad that was like number one on the list. And I just, you know, basically, like we belong to a CSA that I'm going to go work at the farm for the rest of the year. We could talk about that if you want. And so I just like have a lot of carrots all the time. And one day I was like, I just want them to be more fun. And so, yeah, I cut a bunch of things in them and roasted them with lemons and they're so good. And it's like, they're just fun. Like that's just such a fun recipe. And again, like I just really think healthy food should like, fun is a big part of that. So yeah, I just cook super intuitively and it makes me feel so calm and grounded. And I just want everyone to feel that way. But I also believe in providing recipes. And I've always felt like a tension between these two things, like the formal recipes and then also like the intuitive cooking. And I could never wrap my head around this. And then a few years ago, I went to this singing workshop because I am like very comfortable talking to anyone and in front of people, but I'm I like do not raise my voice. Like being on Zoom and I have my headphones thing, like great. But like, if you say you can't hear me, I just start whispering. Like, and it's like been a thing for me. And through therapy, through talking to my wife, I was like, I think I need to do something that scares me a little and helps me because I want to be heard. Like when I feel like I have something to say.
Yeah.
So I went to the singing workshop, which was hysterical and like should be like a short play or something. And it was so funny. And basically I spent this weekend with this group of women and we had a teacher who would sing.
20 women.
Yeah. Yes. You read so closely. And
it made me nervous reading it.
She would sing and then we all just sang the song back to her, just like she did. And she like broke us into groups. And I sang for an entire weekend, like hours and hours of just singing. And it was this amazing experience and hysterical, but also like amazing and empowering. And I was like so terrified, but also like in a very safe way. Like, and I came home, I opened the door and Grace was like, I had a big smile and Grace was like, how was it? And I was like, it was amazing. Like I like my voice. And she's like, so sing me a song. And I was like, I can't remember a single one. And she was like, what do you mean? Like, this is all you did all weekend. Like, and I was like, nope. Can't remember one. And I like really tried. I was like, and I just nothing. And it like hit me. And I was like, this is why recipes matter, because I can sit with you in your kitchen, which I would love to do. I can watch you make your most favorite thing. You can tell me exactly what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I can repeat it back to you.
Right.
I can be so present for this exchange. And then I can go home the same day or a week later or months later. Mm-hmm. And then just be like, wait, how did he make that? And I just was like, oh, if she had given us a piece of paper with the words, I probably would have remembered and I could have like picked it up. And I was like, this is why I write recipes. I didn't get it until I went there.
Yeah. Have you kept up the singing?
I did one. I joined her on a virtual. This was so funny. She has been doing some of her like community sing-along things on Zoom. Mm-hmm. I'm on her like email list. It's like the kind of thing where I'm like, I want to do each one, but then I don't because I'm still weird about it, whatever. But I joined one. And then because Zoom has like a delay, and it's fine for if it's just the two of us talking, because it's just the two of us here, no one else is here, it's totally not stressful. But for a group of people singing, like, I think that is just like a mess. And so we mm-hmm. all had to mute ourselves. And she would sing and record herself and like play it. But so I'm just singing in my kitchen. Like as if I'm with this group of people that we were in, and it was weird. But
do you still cool. But do you still like do it? Like, are you in the shower and are there like songs that you?
Not so much, but I like knowing that I could.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you talk about how the book offers ways to take and offer care. Mm-hmm. There's such a warmth and kindness in how you've approached this book that radiates through each recipe and essay. Can you talk a little about where this approach comes from and what it means to you to take care? Because I love that word.
I do too. And I, what do you feel when you hear that?
I think care is just, it's just putting a little bit of thought into like, what does comfort food for me mean tonight? Does it mean having like a beautiful salad with rainbow carrots? Or is it having a whole vat of mac and cheese with ground turkey in it and like double the cheese, like whatever that is. And just like putting thought into it when I'm making scrambled eggs for my boyfriend in the morning, the way that he likes them with everything bagel seasoning and extra ketchup on the side. It's like, it's just putting that thought, thinking about somebody, thinking about myself, thinking about a memory, whatever it is, but just like really being focused on that.
Yeah. Thanks for answering the question for me. No, I just,
sorry.
I just love what you just said because I don't know, I'm just very interested in what it means for everyone. And because I think it means something different for all of us. And I think it just comes down to being open to figuring out whatever it means for you and knowing it can change. Like that's so, I really appreciate what you said about like at, you know, one night it could mean that beautiful salad and one night it could mean the extra cheese mac and cheese with the ground turkey. Like, and I think just knowing that comfort isn't one size fits all, healthy isn't, care isn't, and when I say take care, which is like how my mom signs every email, like when I say that term, when I think about taking care of myself, when I think about taking care of other people, like it is just, it's about consideration. And
yes,
I think that is, yeah, that is totally how I love to cook. It's with a lot of consideration, because I think that cooking allows us to express ourselves and express our care and consideration. So when you put the extra ketchup and the everything bagel seasoning, it's like, hey, I'm paying attention. And I don't have to tell you that. I can just show you. And that Correct. Feels really powerful. And that is definitely how I approach cooking, because I think it just allows me that opportunity to, express myself. And I think that feels really good. And I try to do that with, I would say, as much as possible, just like a real, like, generosity of spirit. And, you know, that's why it's 110 recipes. Like, it was going to be 100. And I was like, no, just a little bit more. Like, you know, there's 10 chapters, but there's 11 recipes in each chapter. Cause I just, that feeling of like a little extra, like if you were here in our home tonight, which I wish you were, and I was making you dinner after this, like there would be enough food on the table that, like, a little bit more than we'll probably eat, but I mean, eat all of it, eat whatever you want. But like, I like that feeling of abundance. I think that is, you know, and I just feel it's a privilege to be able to have that. And I think it's the wonderful feeling, and that's how I want to feel.
Totally. Speaking of care, I'd like to take care of our lovely audience. That was a horrible segue. I'm going to leave. But I have some really lovely questions here that I'd like to, that I just received. From a fellow, Julia, how did your experience serving unhoused and food insecure individuals inspire this book, if at all?
That is a great question. I think like the work I do in my own community, like the work with our food pantry and stuff, it really, so Grace and I spend a lot of time at Angel Food East, where we make meals for homebound clients. And we also spend time at our local food pantry, where we, you know, pack like food bags for anyone who needs them.
Oh, and wait, there's that awesome chicken that you, is it the chicken that you did with the roasted chicken that you did at that food pantry?
Yeah. There's like a ton of recipes.
That looks so good. From
that cooking, because that cooking is all about healthy comfort food. And it's also where we've cooked once a week for years. So it's just, we've accumulated a lot of ideas in that kitchen. Yeah. So I share a lot of them here, but I appreciate this question in terms of like food insecurity, because I mean, so many people more than ever during the pandemic, there is so much insecurity, just full stop, in our country. And we see it through food, and we see it in the lines at the food banks, and we see it in all the systems that make that a fact in this very wealthy country. And for me, my experience just locally at our local food pantry, I would say the biggest thing I've learned, and what I really tried to weave into this book, is just how important agency is, and asking people what they want, like not telling people what they should have. Not, as you were saying, like I try to never come in as like a know-it-all or authority. Like, I'm here to help. Like, that is what I want to do. And my helping you is, that helps me. And like, we are all connected, and I am not better or anything. And that is something that I really, I don't know, I've really taken from our experience working at our food pantry, because these are my neighbors. This is my community. I could be on the other side of that exchange at any point. And I think putting just faces to names, and not treating people as statistics and just as people with agency and choice, and also not having any, like, it's really helped me understand that healthy is for everyone to define, because me being like, well, let me put the healthy thing in your bag. And it's like, what does that mean? Like, if someone,
I didn't ask for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I appreciate that question. Thank you.
No, it's like being of service in the truest sense of the word, I think. Shelly is asking, many of my comfort food recipes are made with butter, beef, and heavy cream. Same, Shelly. Same. Do you have any suggestions for substitutes to make them less fatty, more vegan, or sustainable?
Sure. I mean, if that feels important to you. I mean, I think I love that you are aware of the foods that you love the most. And I would say to not like that you should have those things. But if, you know, if you don't want them all the time or anything, I think I'm just not a huge fan of substitute. Like if you know, if I want ice cream, which I basically always want because I love ice cream, I would rather have like a little bit or a lot if I want it, like of just really good ice cream. And I find if I eat some substitute for that, like I will just never be satisfied. And I will eat probably enough to make me physically uncomfortable.
Right.
It's like not a great feeling. And I didn't even have the thing I want, you know? So yeah. I think like have your creamy beef moment whenever you want. But I think otherwise, combining it with other things that are just as delicious, you know, is really great. Like there's a whole chapter of like vegan one pot meals in the book because, you know, I eat everything, but I, you know, just as like maybe one night I'll have Mexican food and one night I'll make Thai food. Like one night I'll often make vegan food. Like vegan eating and cooking is a big part of my diet, but I'm not a vegan. And I like approaching things that way. Just, you know, nothing being all or nothing. So, and maybe if you want to add some cream to the, I don't know, stewed chickpeas or something and make them a little richer, like that's a way to combine it. But you can also have that one night and not another. So I wouldn't go down the substitution route because I just think it's never going to be what you actually want and right. How amazing to have what you actually want.
Yeah. No, good answer. Last question.
Last question. This flew by.
I know. Which culinary figure, past or present, would you most want to cook with?
Antony. I mean that. I think it would be so fun.
So down. So honored. And we and now the last question. What are we going to make?
Your choice. I'm open.
Cabbage rolls.
Yeah, done. I think that would be great. Yeah. I feel like you... My wife and my mother all share a very just overwhelming, devout love of sour cream.
Yeah, because, yeah.
So I think we'll have a bowl of that on the table and we can just put it on everything.
Absolutely. Full fat, please.
Yes.
Chives on top.
Yeah. Mm. Life is too short for low fat sour cream.
This has been such a pleasure.
Yeah. This has been so great. I thank you so much. Thank you.
Everybody, seriously, buy the book. If it's for the thoughts alone or the fish cakes or just all of it, really, like, do yourself a favor. This is like,
thank you.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book.
Thank you so, so much.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guest was cookbook author and food writer Julia Tertian, whose new book is Simply Julia, 110 Easy Recipes for Healthy Comfort Food. She was joined in conversation by Antony Porofsky, a co-host on the hit television show Queer Eye. I'm David Kwan, editor and producer of the program, and Tina Pamitwan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Roshanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. Thanks for listening.